Hey, everybody. Welcome to Mini Crush.
Monday on a Wednesday.
Mini Crushing It. Mini Crushing It.
Is that a thing? Is that like a song, or do you just make that up off the top?
Off the dome, as you say.
That's very well done, Chuck. I like that. We should make that into a recurring theme.
Mini Crushing It. Actually, you know what song I have stuck in my head is, have we ever talked about Free to Be You and Me?
It's starting to come back to me, but not.
I don't know if we have or not. I feel like I repeat myself on the show, but Free to Be You and Me was a record made by Marlo Thomas in the 70s.
Okay.
With a bunch of her famous friends about acceptance of others and, you know, it's for children.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And they had a song on it called It's All Right to Cry, sung by Rosie Grier, who was this big football player. And I sing that for Ruby when she gets upset sometimes.
Aww.
And she had a rough morning.
That sounds like some Sesame Street.
This morning it sort of is.
Yeah.
It's all right to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you.
If only that were true. If only crying was literally just expelling the sadness so it would never return.
It kind of helps, though.
It does help.
Like, if you got a good cry, it's cathartic.
I mean, I do like a good movie cry. I think we both are in the movie crier camp.
Yeah, man. I cry.
I live for it, you know?
It's great.
That's how I know it's done a good job.
Tears are flowing.
Yeah.
At my house, Noel. Rosie Grier, boy. That album was great. Like, that would, I had a long dream to do that as a stage play. Do the It's Free to Be You and Me album.
I know nothing of this.
Like,
I need
Mel
to
Mel Brooks
it out.
Is on it, what? And Alan Alda, and
jeez.
It's really, really terrific, and it's great to look back on it because it was a big part of my childhood, and it teaches all the right messages. It's great. There's one bit called William Wants a Doll, about a boy that wants a doll and plays with a doll. There's one about a girl being nice to her grandmother, and it's like these very progressive.
That's very forward-thinking for the time. I mean, the
sure.
whole like gender nonconformity already
absolutely,
being
man.
Codified in a children's song in the 70s. That's pretty amazing.
All right, Noel, we're going to start off this week with another explainer since we're in the Oscar mood. By the way, everyone keep your fingers crossed. There's a couple of potentially pretty great guests on the horizon, but we need all the movie-crushing vibes sent out there into the universe.
Clap your hands like
to make it happen.
Pixie dust style. No, Tinkerbell style.
Is that how it happens?
You clap your hands when Tinkerbell dies, and that
what?
Brings her back to life.
Spoiler.
Well, it's in the... You know, it's audience participation in the play version of Peter Pan.
Oh, okay. And they manifest. That's how you manifest something?
They don't really explain it. They just say you got to clap your hands, and that makes Tinkerbell come back to life.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we're clapping our hands to get a couple of good guests. One is it's just a guest I've long sought after, and they said, hey, they may be available in L.A.
I think I know the one.
Oh, really?
I was talking to Ramsey about it.
Yeah, you do know the one.
I know the one.
But I don't want to jinx it.
No, not at all.
Out loud.
Nope.
But I was like, I'll go to L.A. for that. And there's another one. Our head sales guy is trying to build a sales pitch for a movie, to advertise on this show and others. And he said, hey, if it came down to it, would you have this director and writer on?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I certainly would.
Okay.
So I don't want to jinx either
no,
one
no,
of
no.
those.
I'm excited.
I know that everyone hates it when I do
that. That one I don't know about, so I'll be surprised as the rest of us.
All right, Noel. So what we're going to do this week, continuing the little Oscar bits here and there. This one is pretty Oscar heavy in different ways, but I'm going to explain to you all about the statuette, the Oscar statuette, the most, maybe the most famous trophy in the world, some might say.
I saw a thing about how they make the Super Bowl trophy. I think Tiffany makes it, the Tiffany company. And it's like, it's all handmade and hand, you know, sanded and, you know, forged and all this stuff.
Sure.
And there was a really great video behind it. And I think it's worth like, I don't know, $100,000, something crazy like that. But
is
it a similar story with the Oscar trophy?
No, I don't think the actual value of the individual piece of hardware is that much because they're cranking out, you know.
Yeah, this is just a single trophy for the entire game.
Exactly. Yeah. But they have begun giving this thing out since, I believe, 1929. They formed the Academy in 1927. And actually, it may have been no. I think the initial awards banquet was in 29. Listen to me stumbling through this already. But they got together in 1927 as an academy, and that's when they started kind of having organized talks about how they should do these awards, like getting the plan together. And they met in downtown L.A. They said, I think we should do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And, of course, they said, we got to have a statue, a statuette I don't know what the difference is. Statuette's just smaller, I guess.
I think so.
Handheld.
It's sort of a diminutive statue.
So they said we need a little handheld award. And there was an art director at MGM named Cedric Gibbons who designed a knight with a reel of film and a sword and everything. And then they got a sculptor named George Stanley and actually formed this thing into a little statuette that you could hold. It was still sort of the beta version, I guess. But that's where it initially came from. And then the first awards banquet was in May of 1929. At the Hollywood Roosevelt, Noel, where you've stayed.
I have, yeah.
They had the very first Oscar ceremony there.
Is that right? Was it like in, is there a ballroom that I might have missed? Or would it have been like in the lobby,
Yeah, it was in the lobby. It was at the concierge desk. It was in the Blossom Room. It was a pretty small affair back then, though.
Okay.
The Roosevelt's still okay.
So cool, though. Yeah. It's still very much, like, it doesn't feel like they just gutted it. Like, it looks very much the same as it ever did.
Sure, kind of throwback. Mm-hmm. I like it. And since then, I believe they've made about 3,000 of these statuettes over the years. And it's 13 and a half inches tall, if you're ever curious about that. And it weighs, you know how people always talk about how heavy it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's 8.5 pounds.
Whoa. It's dense.
Got some heft.
So now I got to know them about the materials, Chuck.
Well, they still have that film reel, first of all. They have 5 spokes on the wheel. And it signifies it's representative of the original 5 branches of the Academy: acting, directing, producing, writing, and then the technicians. They lumped all into one category. And this is sort of true to its original design. The base, actually, the big fat base has varied a little bit over the years, but I think they settled that in 1945, and it has been exactly the same since then. The official name of it is not the Oscar. Of course, that's a nickname. It's the Academy Award of Merit, but everyone calls it Oscar. And this is where it gets a little murky because there are a few competing stories of where Oscar got its name. And one of them is that the Academy librarian, I think this is the most widely distributed story, but there was a librarian at the Academy. Eventually, she became executive director. Her name was Margaret Herrick. And when she saw the trophy for the first time, as the story goes, she said it looks like her Uncle Oscar. So that's nice. Sort of the leading story. But in 1939, they started, you know, they officially adopted that name, the Oscars. And that's pretty much the story, man. They're solid bronze, plated in 24 karat gold. So now, it's not solid gold.
Oh, sure. But, well, the bronze is probably it's where the heft comes from, right? I mean, that's a—
Yeah. Gold is probably heavier than bronze,
though,
right?
Oh, that's true.
I don't know my metal weights.
I'm not a metallurgist.
I know that Megadeth is the heaviest metal.
Are they, though?
No.
They're one of those bands where their album covers are always much more, like, scary than their music.
Well, kind I'm of sure like, they were not like—
Like Iron Maiden.
Yeah, they weren't scary metal. Neither was Iron Maiden.
Yeah, exactly.
They like to evoke those things, but they weren't like the shit
they're
you get
like
in
opera
Norway.
Metal. Yeah, no. Oh, speaking of which, have you seen the trailer for the new— There's a movie called The Lords of Chaos.
Oh, about the dark metal?
It's about the black metal bands
in
Norway.
Yeah, man, I want to see that.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks. I have high hopes for it, but it looks a little bit like almost like a teen drama kind of thing, but with the whole black metal frame story.
But with human sacrifice?
Hopefully. And church burnings.
During World War II, Noel, the Oscar was painted plaster for 3 years because, of course, during the war, they needed their medals.
Times were tight.
To make bombs and tanks and things. And then after World War II ended— they said, hey, if you got one of those shitty plaster Oscars, why don't you come on down here and trade it in? And they would go down to the Academy office and then get arrested because it was all a setup.
Jeez. Do you remember
that Simpsons?
No.
That's a common thing that police have done over the years is get people with warrants out to come to them by having some fake thing.
Like you won the sweepstakes or whatever?
Yeah, and like they're dumb enough. And Homer did that one time. He thought he won a boat or something.
That's so funny.
And he went down to the police
station. I just realized that Greg Daniels, who like created the Office, American Office and Parks and Rec, he was a big Simpsons writer. I didn't realize that. Yeah. And I was just rewatching Parks and Rec the other day, and they did that exact same thing to Ron Swanson, serving him with a like a subpoena or a, like a divorce papers or something
like
that.
Like it was an award?
No, it was he had won like a year's free gift certificates at like his favorite steakhouse or something like that. And he came around. And then they're like, you've been served. And he was like, oh, I don't like you, but I respect the effort.
Oh, I love that guy. To get him on one day, what a dream.
No, seriously. I just had no idea he came because I actually heard Conan talking about him on his podcast, which is great.
Yeah.
Talking about how they like kind of came up together as writers on Saturday Night Live. And I did not realize he went back that far.
Conan just snaps his fingers and he can get a guest null. He doesn't have to struggle with the rest of us.
I know.
All right. We're going to go into social studies. We're going to segue right into a very kind of straight-ahead Oscar question. What's your pick for Best Picture? And give us one sentence why. And, well, right away people are naming things that aren't even nominated for Best Picture.
Well, you didn't specify that it had to be nominated.
Oh, no. Be on my side.
Okay, Chuck, who are these fools? Cast them asunder. Are you going to go with them?
No, I'm only going to do the ones that are nominated because there's a follow-up question in another episode that where this is addressed. So play by the rules, everyone. Jennifer Collier-Pelton says, Bohemian Rhapsody, I truly enjoyed it. And when it was over, I wanted to see it again. That's all you got to say. I saw it for the third time the other night.
Did you really? I have not seen it for the first time yet.
I loved it. Emily and I watched it.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I really want to.
Mary O'Donnell says, the favorite, Noel, one of yours. It was beautifully shot, flawlessly acted. And compelling political intrigue, and almost entirely about women for once.
Yeah, and women are like badasses in it. Although the only, I guess, not problematic aspect, but is it's like it's two women beefing really hard against each other.
Sure. It's like, why can't you be friends and take over the world?
But it's also for the favor of another woman.
Oh.
Rather than like, you know, and the men are these kind of ancillary idiot players in the story, which is kind of pretty cool. So,
Don't tell me any more, Noel. I might go see that today.
I think you should. It's fantastic. Is today your like day movie day?
I think so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I looked at it because I was supposed to be in New York right now, so I cleared my schedule. Daryl Murphy says, Roma, not just deeply and profoundly moving, but also glorious cinematography. Could not agree more, my friend. John Hoskins says, Black Panther, because it was the only one he saw.
That's, yeah, you got to appreciate the honesty there.
I like it. The Gooch, David Gooch, says, I haven't seen all of them yet, but Black Klansman was the best directed and most powerful movie I saw this year. Kristen Egan says, second Black Klansman, powerful, sure, but also wildly entertaining.
Yeah, it's funny. It's, I mean, and it like,
it's just a fun, good movie.
It does a good job of like balancing those elements.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally agree.
Even when it gets heavy, it doesn't get heavy handed. It's just kind of like really dials it in and like really hits home.
Yeah, agreed. Dylan Orr says the favorite was his favorite. Karen Schlump Hughes says Bohemian Rhapsody for its repeat watchability. I love it more each time I see it. Karen, I was just talking about that. Greta Koenig says the favorite. So quirky and those ladies. The Death of Stalin. I saw it.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Dude, it's great.
It's fantastic, right?
Oh, man. Just so great.
And that's another one.
So funny.
But it also gets kind of heavy for like here and there.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, just such a great idea to like tell this true historical story and just cast Brits and Americans and just do your accent.
Yeah.
You had to kind of wrap your head around that.
Oh, I know.
But like, who didn't want to see Steve Buscemi as Khrushchev?
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
Oh, God, I loved it.
And it's
loved
like, it's a foil that you don't even have to like lean into that hard. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everything else was so pitch perfect, like pitch in terms of historical accuracy the sets
just
and the costumes.
Great.
And then it's like, someone might see it and be like, they really screwed that one up, you know. Like
the acting
was horrible, but no, it's totally
it's
perfect.
The makers of that, I think they're the people that did Veep.
Mm-hmm. It's Inucci is his name.
Yeah, I want him to just keep doing these movies.
Yeah,
just keep doing historical comedies and exactly in this style. I want like five more.
It's certainly a thing you could recreate.
Oh,
you know?
You could just pick any, like, you know, you do Ridiculous History. Just pick any cool historical thing.
That's absolutely true.
God, I would love it. So anyway, Mike Dickinson says, The Deaths of Stalin, I don't think that's nominated for Best Picture, though, is it?
I didn't see it. Was it not? I think it was nominated a handful of times.
Okay, well.
But it was in smaller categories, if anything.
You snuck through, Mike. I'm going to start reading even if they're not nominated. Because Mike Doyle says, if Beale Street could talk. Have not seen that yet. I've heard it's really, really great, though. Want to see it.
And that's the Moonlight director, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Man. Mm-hmm. For sure. Amina Stimler says, Black Klansman again. Spike Lee, because seriously, it's about time. Karen Dromboski says, A Star is Born. As a former aspiring musician, it made me cry the drive home, and I generally have a cold, dead heart.
I just watched the music video for one of those big songs that Bradley Cooper does with Lady Gaga. It's called
good?
Shallow. It's fantastic. And the video is all clips from the movie.
He just hopped up on stage with her in Vegas.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
He sings all right.
Well, he's great in the song. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they, you know, auto-tuned him or something, but he sounds fantastic.
Well, everyone's auto-tuned
That's
these days.
True. That's true.
I got
Except
confirmation
Adele.
On that.
Except from... Adele. Never Adele, Chuck.
Never Adele, meaning always Adele.
Never Adele moment.
She's great. Zach Pointer, our old friend, says Black Panther, because the voice it gives to many. J.J. Verbino, another nod for If Beale Street Could Talk, which was not nominated, but Ashley Reynolds loved that movie as well.
You think they'll do that thing where they give it to Spike just because of that about time logic?
Sometimes people get like a career Oscar sort of,
right.
Like, hey, you know, done this for so long and probably been ignored unfairly. But I think it would be deserved for Black Klansman at this point in his career to still bring the heat like he did in that movie. All for it. Ian Lyon says Green Book, it's a near-perfect film that tackles still so sadly relevant issues in an extremely entertaining and thoughtful manner.
With Vigo, right?
Yeah, I want to see that.
I haven't seen that either.
Vasi Papadopoulos says Roma, perfectly shot and moving. And a couple more for The Favorite. Tina Wright and Caleb Wyant both love The Favorite. I got to go see it today, Noel.
It's its own thing. The closest thing I can compare it to is like a Kubrick kind of Barry Lyndon thing, but much more absurd, but not over the top. And it's really hard to describe because it is very, very bizarre and psychedelic, but it's also a very formally, like, on the perfect kind of historical period piece. Like, it's very – you've got to see it to kind of so we can talk about it. I can't wait.
No more, Noel.
That's it.
Karen Knox, one final vote for Black Panther because it would blow most people's minds.
If it won the award, it would blow people's minds?
Oh, I think that's probably what she meant.
Mm-hmm.
That would definitely blow some minds.
I think it would too.
I'm all about mind-blowing. And finally, everyone, we are going to finish up with comment card Oscar Adish. I asked specifically for Oscar-related questions for me and Mr. Noel over there. All right, we're going to start with our old friend Vanessa Lopez. Are there any – this is a great question. Are there any categories you feel deserve more attention or a category you feel should be created? She said, I think casting directors should get an award.
That's a good point.
Noel, let's think about this.
Now, I have a question for you. You're always doing these kind of behind-the-curtain Hollywood reveals. Surely the casting director interfaces with the director.
Mm-hmm.
Like the director could, you know, is going to be like, it's got to be this person, or especially if it's like a writer-director.
Oh, yeah. The casting director is thinning the herd and finding people to present to the director to choose or whoever's doing the choosing, if, you know, generally a director. But sometimes if it's a big studio and a huge producer, they might have more say even than a low-level director.
And also we're talking about like so often a smaller role that might not be on the director's radar.
Yeah.
The casting makes a huge – obviously is everything. You know, and that
because
really...
sometimes you go into it knowing like I wrote this movie for
whoever.
I know who my leads are. But we got to fill this picture out. And casting directing is very much an art form. To be able to sit through all – and it's tough in that room to be able to see that magic, you know?
Yeah, but it is – why is that not a category?
I don't know, man.
Best casting.
Yeah.
And it maybe, could be
– yeah, that's not a bad category.
No, it really isn't because there are so many other categories. Like aren't there's best – like what are some of the job type Oscars, you know, that are associated with – like there's sound designer obviously and like
– sure.
You know.
Sound editing.
Sound
and
editing,
like
right.
that. An editor – So sound designer.
It's almost like they're limiting it more to the people that actually put their hands directly on the product, which I would argue that's still something a casting director is doing.
Yeah, and some of these awards are group awards, like Best Cinematography while the director of photography is calling the shots, there is a large team of grips and electrics who are making that shot look the way it looks. So and that's why you will see – in fact, cinematographers are I think, more commonly noted than a lot of winners for thanking their crew and their camera assistants and
that's
the grips
right.
and electrics.
That's right.
And so I don't know. I think I agree with Vanessa. Best casting in a film. That would be great. All right, we'll move right on to Ian Lyons because this is kind of similar. He says, do you think stunt people should have their own category? Do they get a technical Oscar?
I don't know if it's
– because that's a whole other thing.
It would be a whole other thing.
But no, you know the technical Oscars, the ones they host the day before.
Oh, no, 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 no. I don't know anything about
this. Yeah, they always get up at some point during the Oscars and say, you know, they have their technical achievements awards, which is a whole other list that doesn't get like – they have their own ceremony on a different day.
Interesting.
And they it's just a much smaller affair.
Huh.
But a lot of like smaller tech awards go out there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to win an Oscar.
Well, then surely stunt coordination and things like that would be – Part of that, I would think.
I bet you it is. Like the inventor of the Steadicam won an Oscar, like for inventing the Steadicam. Like you can get awards in many, many different ways. But if it's not, I bet it is. But if it's not, then stunt work should totally be recognized.
You know, it's funny. There's an article on IndieWire called 7 New Oscar Categories the Academy Needs to Create.
Oh, interesting.
And one of them is suggested is stunt coordinator.
What else?
First time film. Hmm. These are just ideas. Breakthrough performer, which is a little bit of a loaded thing. Best voice performance. That, yeah.
Oh, like for animated films?
Yeah, for animated stuff.
That's basically best acting done in your warm-up pants.
That's very true. Let's see. Best original soundtrack. Okay, these are not that great. Point being is this is a question people
are asking.
Best
soundtrack's not bad.
But it's not bad because I guess you only get best song, which is maybe just like a historical carryover thing.
But best soundtrack is – I don't know, man. It's kind of like giving an award for putting together a mixtape.
Nah, but that's, you know, but what about like the Wes Anderson soundtracks that are so well curated
and
the Tarantino stuff?
No, you're right. But do you get an award for that, for basically compiling someone else's work? You know what I'm saying, though?
But it's all about like
a little hinky.
Suiting the style and, you know, having it match up. And it's an aesthetic choice. I like hinky. Hinky's a thing that like detectives say when things don't smell quite right. They say things are a little hinky. It's true.
Caroline Gaston asks this. Jack O'Brien, our colleague over at Daily Zeitgeist, often insists that Oscars should be given out 5 years later so they can accurately award movies that have more of a cultural impact. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, but
of course you're not going to do that.
The logistics of that sound.
You're not going to do that. Jack is you know, talking crazy talk.
No, it's true, but I mean,
but I see his point.
We already know that the Oscars aren't necessarily based on which movies
have
the most cultural impact. Yeah. They've been coming less and less that over time. It's much more of a popularity contest and the whole
true.
Who does the best, you know, for your consideration campaign
sure.
and all that.
Agreed. And she says maybe have Jack on as a guest. I am definitely going to have Jack when I go to LA next time.
Oh, cool.
He's already picked out Pulp Fiction. He's earmarked that, and I told him I would save it for him. Matthew Gilbert asks, should The Departed have won an Oscar? I reckon so, of course. I remain baffled as to why Scorsese's other works didn't win him Oscars by this stage.
I think maybe for the reason we just said.
Eh?
I don't, you know. I mean, because there weren't there, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio was in it, Jack Nicholson was in it. It was just like a big, and it also could have been one of those, like, it's about time things.
Yeah, like, for
like
sure.
Like the whole, you know, maybe. Maybe Spike Lee will get it this year.
Maybe so. Oh, this is a good question. Fred Nurk says, if you could go to the Oscars, but only as a seat filler, would you do it? Oh, hell yes, I would.
Yeah.
That would be fun as shit.
It's a big time commitment, though.
Yeah. No, well, getting all dolled up, going sitting around with different people.
Just scooting around?
You never know. Like,
you think they'd move you? Do you think you'd be like asked
They do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they move you around and fill seats.
My first experience with anything like that was our iHeart Radio Podcast Awards that just happened that you gave a miss to. You
sure,
were
I couldn't be
booked
there.
Elsewhere. But it was a much smaller affair, but it was very much that same vibe where it was like very selective as to who sat where and who was used to fill what
you
space.
Know who sat at Jerry's table?
Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
She told me that. I was so mad.
They gave him my seat.
Oh, God. Did they really?
Well, that's
is that a story?
Yeah, it's a story. Yeah.
Did you get kicked out of your fucking seat?
I never had a seat in the first place, Chuck.
Oh, no.
I was relegated to a back room. No, I ended up in the balcony. It was fun. We had a good time.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to hear more about the story.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Ian Lyons, by the way, one of our question askers, actually was an Oscar seat filler. He says he's done it twice and it was a lot of fun. So Ian knows, everybody. I bet it's fun. I wonder, I mean, I'm sure you have specific instructions to like not bother the people that much.
Oh, yeah.
You can't like sit down next to Clooney and be like, hey, dude, what's up?
Clunes.
Clunes.
My dude. No.
I bet Clunes is cool to the seat fillers though.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. You let them talk. It's sort of like a probably you let them talk to you.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And even then, don't push it.
All right. Let's finish up with one more. All right. We'll finish up with Catherine Blair. If there was one thing you could change about the way the Oscars are run and organized, what would it be? Well, they should shorten it up a bit. And they have actually, because the one thing I was going to say is, just get rid of the fluff and the nonsense, too many dumb bits, and they've been doing that more and more. They have streamlined it a bit over the recent years.
I got tricked. I thought that it was true that Nick Kroll and John Mulaney were going to host the Oscars as the Oh Hello guys.
Because the what guys?
You know, the dudes from Too Much Tuna or whatever. They did Oh Hello Broadway show or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're like these two kind of grizzled New York, Upper West Side, like weird dudes.
Boy, they're so good together.
Lifer roommates. It's great. I saw the show on Broadway. It was fantastic. Now it's on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it.
I have not, but I did see them host, I think, the Independent Spirit Awards a couple years ago.
Well, there you go. So they've got experience. So I kind of assumed that it was true. And I guess they were just trolling and joking about it because apparently they haven't picked a new host yet because Kevin Hart kind of was problematic or made some tweet that was offensive. And then he got like a homophobic tweet of some kind that he got kicked off.
He got kicked off, and then there were calls for people to put him back on, like Ellen DeGeneres even, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they have no host right now. I don't know what the deal is. I think they might go hostless and just have a series of people coming up and running the bits.
Well, that's sort of what I was getting to, is how important do you think the host is? Does that make a difference for how much you enjoy? Isn't the host almost like it's total filler? You're just there to see who wins the awards. Like, who cares?
Yeah, and the main role of the host is sort of that beginning bit. And then the rest of the show, they do like a couple of various comedy bits, but it's mainly just to say who's coming up next. And admittedly, back in the day when Billy Crystal was doing his thing and had a nice run of hosting, like kind of pretty creative intro bits, those were good. But I don't know, man. Like I've complained last week about sort of the shine being lost for the Oscars. The older I get, just give them out.
Give them out. Do it all
right.
Off the air. Do it all on the red carpet. Let's just have a red carpet and no award. I bet you the people that go would probably love that.
Let's just do it over email. That way no one has to see anyone.
Everyone I hear talking about going to the Oscars, as much as they say it's like, oh, it's so glamorous and fabulous, it's also like you're there for 5 hours and it's a total chore.
Well, and you can't drink. It's not like the Golden Globes. Yeah. You get all liquored up at the Golden Globes.
Is that right?
Yeah, they have booze at the table.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, at the Oscars, you can't like – I think you can run quickly to the bar in between commercial breaks, but – they can't expect people, Hollywood elites, to sit there for 6 hours and not drink.
And yet they do.
Who was it? Sarah Silverman had her little weed pen in her purse.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, on the red carpet a couple of years ago. It may have been last year. They were like, what are you wearing? What's the, you know, all that stupid shit. And she said, oh, this is my dress, blah, blah, blah. And she said, and what about your accessories? And she went, well, and she opened her purse. She went, I have my weed pen in my purse. And this is before it was legalized in California,
oh,
too.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, I was like, good for you, Sarah Silverman. She ain't scared. All right, Noel, I think that's all we have for this week.
It seems reasonable.
Are you good?
We're at a solid 31:45, my friend.
All right, well, let's do it then. I don't want to reach 32 minutes. So, goodbye.